Big Blue Door is a theater group devoted to true stories, long-form improv, and comedy writing. From 2012 to 2015, Big Blue Door produced a live, monthly show called the Big Blue Door Jam, where people shared 6 to 8 minute true stories inspired by monthly themes. This story was told by Mickey Campson in July of 2013. The night's theme was breaks.
You may remember from some of my past stories that I actually drove a used Yugo, and it broke down a lot, and it was crazy. And I had a crazy childhood, but that gives you a lot of crazy stories to work from. And part of being older is that you get to look back at these stories and kind of pick and understand what the benefit of those are. So the breaks that I've had in life, they've been abundant, actually. But let's talk about the serious breaks, and that would have to be a life-saving break. My life-saving break happened when I was 5, and my 9-year-old older sister used to take myself and my little brothers on nature walks. And we were like a little line of ducks going down the hill. And we would just go down the path, and then we would turn a left, and it was a big woodsy area we grew up in. So we'd head down the road, turn another left, and we'd come up the drive. Really wasn't a long walk, but it seemed big to us because we were so small. And she'd find things. And we'd take them home. And one day she found what appeared to be a wooden pineapple. And it was at the foot of a mailbox. So she took the wooden pineapple, put her finger through the ring, and carried on with the rocks and the leaves and walked home, swinging the little pineapple. And we were walking right behind her. And as we got up to the top of the house and we went in to see my World War II Marine dad and handed it off to him, I remember him literally going horizontal off the couch as he said, "God damn it, Doris, Debbie's got a grenade." And the entire household went into circus panic mode. So the universe was really good to me at that point because it didn't explode that device. Now, they did have the police come and dump it in the lake. That break actually made the newspapers. But there are other breaks, and there's breaks that I call a backhanded break. Now, backhanded break is kind of interesting because, well, you gain something from it, but something else has to bite the dust. And, for example, when you're 8 and your parents bring home a spider monkey for a pet. My spider monkey lived in a crate 50% of the time, and the other 50% of the time, he had free roam of the house we lived in. Small, humble house. He'd be up and down the ceiling to floor lamp poles, the little ones that twisted in the 60s, across the top on the little tiny curtain rods. And one day, my sister, really feeling generous, she decided to bring home 6 boys from the neighborhood. And she was going to introduce them to our new addition to our family. So the little spider monkey is in his crate with a sheet over the top of it, and she yanks back the sheet real magician-like, and the little guy's pleasuring himself. The monkey was shocked. My sister burst into tears because she was so humiliated. The boys hooted and hollered. I just sat on the couch and laughed. I had no idea what was going on, but I thought it must have been pretty funny. Now, the cool part is, though, is that's really a backhanded break when you think about it, because the monkey didn't do too well because he only made it through 1 Michigan winter. But I, on the other hand, I got a lot of circus cool credibility in the neighborhood from that. And that credibility has been really abundant because everyone still remembers I owned the monkey. I mean, I can be on Facebook, I can go back and visit people, and they look back and go, when they figure out who I am, "Aren't you the family that owned the monkey?" Nobody else I know ever owned a monkey. Now, that same sister and I actually went on a family bonding adventure, and we went up north to visit with my dad to his cabin. And as we're on the way up there, my sister and I are doing sisterly-like things in the car and chatting away, and I convince her to give me her big silver hoop earring, her big silver earrings that she's wearing, and I put them on. Of course, that's what you do when you go camping. And my dad, he actually got all excited about his new Salvation Army purchase, which was a 14.5-foot steel metal canoe with all the gear inside. And being the family that we are, we said, "Well, let's go canoeing." So we get up there. None of us had ever canoed before, by the way. So we get up there, and my dad takes us about 3 miles north of his cabin. We get into the canoe. He drops us off, and he waves, because he's going to leave us now, and he's going to go back to the cabin and wait for us to show up. So we get into the boat. I'm in the back. You know, my sister's kind of built like I am, so we're on the benches, and any slight shift of weight is really going to play havoc with this canoe. So we're going down the river, and we're about 2 minutes into the canoe, and I'm thinking, well, I'm doing okay. I got this. I am doing it, man. This is good. And I said something like, hey, let's go check out the flora and the fauna over on the other side. So I'm starting to put some muscle into this thing because I've got to go across the current to get to the other side of the river. So I'm going, and suddenly I realize, oh, man, we are going way too fast. And there's a tree bank over there that we're headed square for. And my sister suddenly leans to the left, and we flipped the canoe. So I came up from the canoe, from standing on the water, and I realized I can't touch the bottom. The canoe is upside down. This water is much colder than I would have expected it to be in April in Michigan. And I don't have a life jacket on. And so, if you can imagine the visual, two middle 40s-year-old women who are kind of low-hung chassis trying to get that body back into a boat by upper body strength only. It's not pretty. So we're throwing ourselves over the side of the canoe once we get the canoe back up, and we take off back down the river again. We're doing okay, but now this time I'm in front. Okay, we're not going to tip this canoe. We're not going to tip this canoe. We're going to get home. And suddenly I realize we're heading over to the left. We're going to the other shoreline now. And we look like a canoe pinball machine, frankly. And we go over to the left, and I realize we're just barreling into the tree branches over there. But we did, and we get the nose stuck in the end of the front end of the tree branches. And suddenly I said, well, okay, we can touch bottom. So take the paddle, and I start slowly, slowly pushing away. Backwards, I do not want to tip this canoe. And of course, I look up, and there's a snake hanging off the top. I did exactly what anybody would do. Took the paddle, whacked the snake goes flying, and we tip the canoe. So I come up, I realize I've only got one earring on. My dad, we get back down to the end of the boat where we end up parking the canoe, and I threw myself onto the shoreline like a survivor, a shipwreck survivor, and I said, looked at him, and he said, his first words were, what the hell took you so long, and where are the damn pads to the canoe? So this is kind of a double whammy backhanded break, because I got a ring out of that remaining ear ring that was still there. My sister still thinks it was my fault, but you know what? I got a good story to share with you.
For more true stories, visit teej.fm. That's teej.fm. For classes in storytelling and upcoming story shows, visit bigbluedoor.org.